You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to my couch, as you always are here. Yeah, it's Wednesday already. I know, can't believe it. 11 in the morning here, Pacific Standard Time, and wherever you're at around the world. We're going to be really well informed today about a lot of psychological tools. So if you've been interested in sort of going deeper and maybe confronting some of your own emotional truths, and if you want to be a little bit more honest with yourself and really get a hold of some of those insecurities and vulnerabilities and find out sort of what you've been shoving down, I have a great guest for you today and a great show. If you also want to heal some of your emotional unresolved stuff and be more at peace, we're going to be talking about anxiety and depression and also physical pain and physical issues that are also exacerbated by our mental unresolved issues. So let's bring my special guest on today right now, Michelle May. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me here. It's my pleasure.
Oh, I love your work. You have done so much to help other people. Your frequency in the quantum universe is quite bright. You're doing great work, girl, and I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much.
And thank you also for coming out with this amazing book, because I really think everybody should pick this up, because everybody has unresolved issues, no matter how big or small, right, Michelle?
Yes, very true.
No matter what it is. So we're going to be talking about her amazing book, and it's entitled What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist. What a great title. I mean, right?
Thank you. It was the last thing to come together, and I'm glad it did.
Well, the thing is what I have learned, and we'll get into that from my practice, sometimes folks will call and we'll talk and we'll have some stuff, and we'll be talking for about 3 months, and then the big stuff rolls out. It's like, what? Oh, dear. And it's about trust, and it's about feeling comfortable with me and you and the therapist to be able to sort of, after we've asked a lot of questions, you and I, roll out things that are really sort of, wow, that's okay. We're getting somewhere here, right? But let me tell folks a little bit more about you. Okay, you're a licensed professional counselor with a private practice in both Virginia and Washington, D.C., specializing in intensive short-term dynamic psychotherapy. As chairperson of this, it's called ISTDP, we'll just say that, core training program at the New Washington School of Psychiatry, Michelle has been teaching and shaping therapists since 2019. She's also a certified teacher and supervisor by the International Experiential Dynamic Therapy Association of licensed professionals and organizations. And of course, you have a private practice office, as I mentioned. You're working with adults, couples seeking help with anxiety, depression, and other emotional difficulties. And also, you have a unique experience in treating physical symptoms. Such as, we could talk about that, but chronic headaches, muscle tension, and other autoimmune issues, many other issues, but anyway. So we're going to dive into this. That all being said, I'd love folks to hear more about your backstory a little bit as to what it was that really propelled you to going forward with all of this information and your studies.
So how I became a therapist, or what propelled me to write?
Yes. How it all happened, how did you become a therapist? And then we'll talk about why you entitled that book, what I Couldn't Tell My Therapist.
Right? Absolutely. I knew I wanted to be a therapist since I was 19 years old, and I was having that age-old question of what do I want to major in college?
Right.
And I remember I was walking by a bookstore, and I looked in the front of the bookstore, and there was just a book on psychology sitting in the window. Yeah. And I had this image of me sitting across from a person having intimate, you know, important conversations. And like from head to toe, my whole body said, this is what I want to do for a living. And so my path was a bit winding. I took a detour in business, but eventually ended up with my master's in clinical mental health counseling. And then began writing this book about 5 years ago as well. And the title, like I was saying, you know, was really the last thing.
Yes.
It was coming down to the wire. Michelle, we got to get a title for this book. And, you know, I'd had lots of different titles. Nothing was really resonating with me. And then I realized that so much of what this book is about is what we cannot communicate.
Wow. Right.
And so this title, you know, sure, it refers to things like secrets that we don't feel comfortable yet expressing for many reasons. But it also refers to that which we cannot consciously communicate because we don't know about it as clients.
Right, right. That makes so much sense. Exactly. We're going to get into that. What don't we know? Well, that's probably why we're having a lot of unresolved issues, because we have to dig. We have to dig. And, you know, with all of the work you're doing with this intensive therapy, it's really excellent therapy, by the way, and you've been there teaching and helping. And you know, I don't want to be negative, but a lot of therapists with whom I'm associated with, and myself sometimes, I have to keep reading up and studying, because this is something that we're constantly evolving with if we're going to help people, you know, with unresolved issues, right? So there's a lot of folks who don't quite help people as much as they could, as you can, with your techniques and stuff. Is it because a lot of therapists are not up to par on reading about this stuff, or?
That's a really phenomenal question. It's a multi-causal issue. Of course, in graduate school, I don't know about you and how it was for you in graduate school, but we were not exposed to very many ways of doing therapy.
No.
Yeah. And we weren't really like shown how to do it. It was very theoretical.
It was. It's so true, Michelle. It's all about the philosophies, who decided what was great, what has worked in the past, CBT, humanistic, psychoanalytics, like, you know, so we are, you're right. And, you know, things like that, but they don't ever say, here's how you really get in that room and get with it.
Exactly. And they don't teach you really how to watch with your eyes, listen with your eyes. I mean, there's so much data that we're missing and trained, you know, not trained to see. And so I think in terms of this deeper type of therapy that I feature in the book, one of the reasons it's now only just kind of catching on a little bit more is because, to be very blunt, it's really hard to learn.
It is.
It's really, you know, hard. We can go to like an EMDR training for a couple of months or weeks, and we can get certified. We can, but this, it takes at least 3 years postgraduate school in a different program. And then really most of the clinicians I know that do this are still in this lifelong state of learning.
It's so true.
And we videotape our work. And when we videotape our work, a lot of therapists like shake in their boots because they can't hide.
Right. That's right.
And that weeds a lot of people out. It really does weed a lot of therapists out, because it takes a lot of extra training, a lot of extra commitment, and a lot of vulnerability. And so that's one of the reasons why I think they're, I mean, again, this is changing, but why there aren't lot of us that are trained to work in the way that is featured in the book.
Right. And, you know, as it's depicted in, you know, programs and movies, and, you know, it's the old school therapist sitting there going, and how does that make you feel? No, that's really going to help. Okay, I'm getting it out, but I could have told my best friend, you know, and so how does that make you feel? You know, it's a whole new genre of let's get down and deep and find out. And we're going to do just that. Well, anyway, if you guys just tuned in, I'm talking with psychotherapist Michelle May. She's written an amazing book. It's called What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist. Ooh, let's talk about your backstory a little bit, Michelle, and some of the issues you were facing with your migraines and your stuff going on with you.
Yeah. So back when I was still in consulting, I had just graduated from the University of Michigan, and I woke up in the middle of the night with the at that point, the worst headache of my life. Oh. And it did not go away for 6 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
24/7.
24/7, never a moment. When I say chronic pain, I mean constant, never stopping pain for 6 years.
You're strong. Oh my God.
You know, it's when life forces these things upon you, most people, they find that they are stronger than they realize, but you know, you certainly still take a beating.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. And so I had this headache and doctors couldn't figure out what was going on. Everyone had their little theories and I would get like these little procedures or little things when a doctor might think that they knew what was wrong.
Right. Right.
Nothing was really doing it. No medications were helping except
Tristan. Nope.
Right. Exactly. Right. And the only thing that would actually help me were opioids.
Right.
And so I had this kind of bizarre experience with opioids in which they actually saved me. Right. We hear a lot about how harmful they could be. And this is 100% true, but we do not talk about people like me whose life was actually probably saved.
I hear you. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad I'm preaching to the choir. So.
Listen, no, you're preaching to the choir, girl.
So. Okay, good. Yeah. And of course, you know, after 6 years, I met a neurosurgeon who finally said, listen, your problem actually is that the back part of your brain called the cerebellum, it's kind of that flower-like part that we see in all of our science textbooks. It was actually coming out of the bottom of my skull and I was taken in for brain surgery 4 days later.
Oh my God, girl.
It didn't actually help.
Yeah.
And then the surgery actually leaked. There was a problem with it. So they had to rush me in for another one about a month later. And then after that surgery, my headaches finally stopped.
Wow. Wow. That's an amazing story.
It was quite an odyssey. And it doesn't end there.
Yeah.
It turned out afterwards that I was still getting these sporadic headaches.
Right.
And doctors said, well, that's normal after what you've been through, la, la, la. So I thought, okay.
Okay. Sure. I hate that when they say that.
Ah, I know. Me too.
Right.
Me too. And so what I found out, and it was only through this intensive dynamic therapy that I feature in What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist, it was only through this kind of work that I actually discovered that my headaches were actually now caused by emotional suppression and repression.
Yes.
And that my relationship to opioids had actually started to shift.
Yes.
And so thankfully, once I saw those issues, I could do something about them. So thankfully now I consider myself headache cured, even though, you know, I might get a headache every now and then if, you know. Sure.
Oh, good for you, honey. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, that's terrible.
It was terrible.
Oh.
Yeah, there's no way around it. It was absolutely a total nightmare.
My goodness.
Yeah.
So the things that you learned that you just explained, can you talk now about the processes that are going on inside or outside of our awareness that actually cause these symptoms? And we did discuss that a lot of therapists aren't trained to notice this, but I mean, what's up with that? I mean, what an incredible discovery.
Well, the unconscious is where so much of our treasure lies, right? The unconscious is somewhere where so much of where our problems are caused and so much of our problems can be healed.
Right.
And so what I discovered was that a couple of different things were happening to cause my headaches. One of the processes that was outside of my awareness was when I felt sadness or anger, my body would have like an anxious reaction to it and tense up.
Oh my gosh.
And this is actually how a lot of people are. It's actually really common.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, my back hurts. I wonder why my back hurts. It actually could be because of one of these processes where we have emotions. We don't even realize it. We just have tension or anxiety. Yes. And so that was one thing that was causing my headaches. And I discovered this I had to discover it over and over and over again. I had to see the evidence because you were not convincing me.
Right.
That this was happening. No way. I'm a therapist. Yeah,
unresolved subconscious issues. What?
Right. Exactly. It's very humbling to know how much of our unconscious is controlling the show.
It is.
But I could see, oh, wow. I was just really letting myself cry about this thing. And then I held back because I felt stupid for crying. And then my head started to hurt. And then when I let myself cry again, my headache would go.
Right.
I always thought crying gives me a headache.
Right.
It doesn't.
Right.
Myself for crying gives me a headache, right? Holding back crying gives me a headache. And then it was the same thing for anger. Finally, anger was allowed to be felt in my body.
Yes.
Remember, anger is just a feeling. It's not an action.
Yeah.
Sure. Anger was in my body. And then when I'd actually hold it back or repress it, boom, my head would hurt. When I would release the anger and let it flow through my body in a controlled and safe body,
right?
My headache would go away. So that was one of the two processes that were going on that caused my headaches, that were going on outside of my awareness.
Yes.
Which is really common.
It is. It really is common. And in your book, by the way, what I couldn't tell my therapist, which is terrific. You talk about two other cases. You talk about the three cases, of course, yours as well.
Exactly.
And how you worked with these people to uncover what was in their unconscious, to really explore and really basically heal a lot of their not only unresolved anxiety, depression, but their physiological issues, because that is such an important point that people don't understand.
Exactly.
You know, we are, and you know, I have some people who would come under the DSM-5 category of "you're a hypochondriac," you know.
Yes.
But and then they say to me, "And am I really making this stuff up?" And I said, "Well, no, you feel real pain,
right?
You actually do. But let's talk about your muscle tone during the day. Let's talk about what's happening in the brain, and you roll all that stuff out in your book, which is wonderful." You know, so our unconscious processes, then, as I understand in your book, they are designed really as survival mechanisms, right? To sort of safeguard our relationships and our outward image. And I'm so sorry, guys. I don't mean this. I don't mean to be sexist, but more men do this than than women who I talk to.
I wish that were true in my experience. My experience, all parties are guilty, but
okay.
But some people do have gender differences.
My bad. it's sort of a built-in thing, I guess. What I'm saying, you know, a lot of guys just are stoic. You know, it's not don't be a wuss. Don't express your feelings. Don't let it out. Don't, you know. So these unconscious processes keep us sane-er
and attached.
And attached.
This is where there are survival mechanisms, because if we don't learn to change ourselves to be more acceptable according to those who are raising us,
right,
we don't have our core attachments. And when we're young, core attachments are survival. It's everything.
Yes, they are.
Oh, right? We're born to depend.
Right. Exactly.
And so we learn to give up these parts of ourselves if they were not accepted by those around us. So you're absolutely right. Survival mechanisms. Yep. We didn't develop them because we were weak. We developed them because we were adaptive.
Right. So we adapt and sort of become molded to, I want to please mommy or daddy or caregiver, whoever it is. Yep. So, and I can't speak out and I can't be myself and I have no identity because I have to be a little soldier. Or do whatever. That kind of thing is what you're talking about. And
exactly.
Or be exposed to severe trauma in a home with substance abuse or just anger and physical, emotional abuse.
Exactly. It can be something as big as that, or it can be something as little as when I express irritation or show irritation with my dad, he starts paying a little less attention to me.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So it doesn't even have to be these big things that you remember. Most of the time, they're actually these tiny paper cuts that just stack up over time and form our defenses, which form parts of our personality.
Right. And we as little kids, we're soaking it all in. Children are so much brighter we don't realize, but yes, they're surviving. They're hypervigilant. What's daddy's face look like today? Came home from work and he's angry. What's mommy doing?
Exactly.
He's physically angry. You know, what did I do? Because it's an ego little soul who's saying, oh, it must be bad.
Right? Exactly right. Yes.
Oh, God.
And so unfortunately, we're really good at adapting, but we're not very good at realizing our environments have changed and that we're ready for an upgrade. And that's where therapy comes in.
Yes, exactly. So I want to talk a little bit also about, you know, so the offshoots are anxiety, or people have anxiety disorders, as they say, or depressive disorders, or, you know, and the tree branches out to all sorts of control issues, OCD, and, you know, things like that, that we really develop in order to, you know, cope with a lot of what's going on in here, and that we can't express it or figure it out, actually, because we've had to sort of just deal with it, you know. So let's talk about anxiety. Because this is one of the most prevalent issues that I'm seeing, and perhaps within your practice as well, Michelle. There's a lot of misconceptions about anxiety, and can you talk about that?
One of the biggest misconceptions about anxiety is that it's relegated to the people who have anxiety disorders.
Right.
That really, actually, both of you and me now are actually sitting here with anxiety. The person listening to this potentially in their car, who's gripping the steering wheel a little bit tighter than they realize, or clenching their jaw more than they realize, or me, I'm playing with my pen.
Right.
That we don't even realize. These are actually anxious processes, a technical term, as a form of created anxiety. So yeah, that's one of the biggest misconceptions about anxiety, is that it's not normal.
Right. Exactly. It's sort of our, whatever is normal, but still it's our fight or flight systems, our subconscious, that everything tightens up and it's like, get ready for the fight. get ready.
So, you know, exactly right there, you know, and this is another misconception about anxiety, is how it differs from fear, right? Because fear is, I'm afraid of an external stimulus, an external thing.
Right.
Anxiety is, there's something inside of me that's a threat. So for example, back to that little, you know, girl that was like, oh, if I'm angry with dad, he'll, you know, ignore me a little more. Then my body learns to set off a little signal, a little danger signal. When I have anger hiding in my unconscious, I'll start to maybe get tension in my neck, in my back, or start to fidget or play with my hair or something like that. So yeah, anxiety is just this thing that we really all have. The question is, to what degree?
Yes. To what degree? Exactly. And you know, you and I have experienced and tried to help people who have serious anxiety. I mean, and that of course leads to physiological panic attacks, you know, heart palpitations, like you're dying, you know, all of those things. But that's the mind-body connection that you talk about as well in your book, which is so profound.
Yeah. One of the biggest disservices we did was make a differentiation between mind and body.
Yes, exactly. And they're so interconnected, right?
Yeah, they're the same. They're the same thing.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And it is for our own protection and survival. But I mean, it's so difficult if we can't like flesh it out, you know, figure out what actually is, you know, the issue. So if we learn more about anxiety, and people really do try to pick up her book, What I Couldn't Share, or What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist, because it will really help you have some tools as well about thinking about some of these things from your past and how you worked with the individuals in your book to help them acknowledge and bring out why they're so anxious. And that's pretty much the same with depression, right, Michelle?
Exactly. If you think about it like this, we have feelings because we're human, but if those feelings were not accepted by those around us, we'll learn to get anxious about them. And then we'll use these strategies or defenses to try to lower our anxiety and get those feelings out as best as they can, right? So defenses are actually what lead to depression. So for example, if again, that little girl's father said to her, "Why didn't you kick that goal in soccer the way we talked about?" Right? The little girl could either get angry back with her father and say, "Hey, I gave it my best." But that might be too scary because then dad's going to ignore me. So what I'm going to do instead, this isn't a conscious thing. This is not a conscious choice. Sure. The little girl might say, "You know what? I'm actually going to agree with dad. Why didn't I kick that goal in the way that we practiced? Right. I am a problem."
Right.
And then that way of thinking, if every time I have anger towards another, I turn it on myself, depression is actually a normal reaction.
Wow. Yes. Yes.
So that's one of an example of a cause of depression.
Right. And when you're working with people as well, you know, you encourage them to explore this stuff, to really feel these feelings. And
absolutely. But they don't even know they have them. So we actually have to work backwards. So in the book, I refer to it like a metal detector, right? I'm trained to see and hear beeps,
right?
Right. So a beep might be someone going like this, repositioning themselves in their chair, right? A beep might be, right, sitting here.
Right.
A beep might actually be a loss of muscle tension, maybe all of a sudden like floppy wrists. And so what we do is I see those beeps and then I say, ah, buried treasure.
Aha.
Let's pause here. And I help that person see what I see.
Yes.
I help that person see how, did you notice when you told me the story about kicking that goal in soccer?
Yeah.
You notice how you immediately made it a problem about you?
Wow. Right?
Right. Exactly. Do you notice how
that makes so much sense?
Right. So we actually talk about the defenses and anxiety first. Invite the person to see them, move them aside. And, you know, in some cases, the feeling will come up next. Great. That's an easy case. But normally it's defense after defense after defense after defense.
Yes.
And because defenses decrease anxiety, anxiety might also be going really high as we move defenses aside. So we also have to regulate that. So that's almost the therapeutic process, actually, in the nutshell.
It's help beautiful.
Face what they avoid.
Right, exactly.
And
like you said, Michelle, we don't know. We're just do bopping along our life with our own defense mechanisms and survival mechanisms from early on, and of course future experiences that trigger those things, that may mirror or trigger those things, right, as we get to be teenagers or young adults, or right. So those situations, which are very similar, will trigger those old neural patterns.
That's exactly right. As soon as somebody comes into our office, the attachment patterns are already getting activated, because coming into a therapist's office means, hey, I'm asking to depend on you.
Right.
And I don't know it yet, but I didn't have a very good history with that.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's beautifully said, Michelle. By the way, in case you just checked us out here, Michelle May's book is What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist. Excellent book. It's also a workbook in that you can learn techniques and understand through the telling of the story of some of these patients that Michelle worked with, how she really helped them heal from not only psychological depression, anxiety, but also physiological issues that really manifest themselves in the body. And I know you studied that so much, Michelle. And, you know, I was lucky enough, and I mentioned this before, to have Dr. Joe Dispenza on the show, who is the mind-body guy. I mean, he's all about, you know, and you are the placebo. Way back when we talked. And it is a real thing. But you, as a specialist and therapist, you're practicing it. You're teaching people. You're helping people really understand the mechanisms of this, which I feel is so important and not being done as much. You were giving the example of, you know, the little girl that didn't kick the soccer ball good enough, and then she turned it on herself. Well, I guess I'm not that good and all that. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between shame and guilt, and like how society, you know, they have guilt all wrong, right? And
all wrong. Guilt is
about healthy guilt. So I really want to hear about that.
Yes, guilt is the most misunderstood feeling in our, I would say actually the entire world. I've not seen this be different in other cultures.
Yeah.
But guilt, many people may have heard this already, but in a sense, healthy guilt is, I'm a good person. I feel my heart. And my heart breaks knowing I hurt you.
Right.
I care about you. And I'm moved to repair. I'm moved towards you. And it's very painful. Real healthy guilt is painful. So it makes sense that people avoid
yes.
it.
Yes.
But unfortunately, that actually ends up hurting really everybody. Shame, very, very rarely can shame be adaptive. It's almost always actually a defense mechanism
that
attacks us. And it makes us want to hide. And it doesn't make us want to repair. It makes us want to annihilate ourselves. And it sometimes, makes us defensive. So shame is really this thing that can eat us alive, while guilt is something that can set us free.
Right. No, that makes so much sense. You know, and it is. It's the guilt. The guilt is so heavy. And I think, you know, if we're talking about certain personality disorders, you know, that some of the characteristics are with the, we hear it's all in social media, the narcissists or the, you know, people who have the exemplify those characteristics. They don't have guilt.
What they have, say somebody who literally actually, you know, qualifies for narcissistic personality disorder, or somebody who has narcissistic traits, which we actually all do.
Sure.
But depending on how many someone has, to what degree they have, the reality is that those people usually just have way more defenses between themselves and their guilt.
Yes.
Or I should say between others and their guilt.
Right.
So the guilt is actually in there. It's just so hidden. It's so deep.
Right.
Underneath all those anxiety and defense layers.
Oh my goodness. It sure is. It makes so much sense. And I think if more people understood that, you know, and you and I, you know, we learn compassion and I see it. Oh, that must have sucked. When you had to be so abused or whatever it was, and that was your only way of, you know, boosting your own self-esteem, well, all the while feeling horrible inside and like you had to constantly put up your defenses, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's a wonderful lesson too, and I know you talk about that as well, is although we have issues with others and others may be real difficult, no matter who they are, compassion for them. Because compassion for ourselves is a biggie.
So, it's a very big one.
And you work with that as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think I've ever met somebody who's come and sat on my couch that didn't need help.
Yes.
Feeling compassion for themselves.
Right, exactly. So when people are exploring themselves, they're going deep and you're working with them and you noticed a little whatever that was in the body shift or the discomfort, and you're doing solid body language analysis is what you're doing, but also the change in the tone of the voice, the eye, you know, you are a trained specialist to cite these things. And then so you go deeper a little bit. Why do you suppose you did that? Or you suggest to them that, you know, perhaps there's anxiety behind what they're talking about, or how does that work in a therapeutic setting, Michelle?
So what I do is I share the data that I'm seeing, right? So I'm not doing major interpretations of what I think this and, you know, saying at what might be happening. I'm saying, you know, you came to me because you are struggling with depression and you want more intimacy in your relationship. And I notice that while you're talking to me, your body seems tense and you have a hard time making eye contact with me. Right, which leaves a big wall between us. So there's a lot of work in the here and now with the therapist's relationship when it's clinically appropriate, which it often is. And so that person might say, oh, no, I'm not looking away from you. I'm just thinking.
Right.
And then I might say, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's difficult to look at me and think at the same time.
Right.
What feelings come up towards me when you look at me? And that is a very different question. I really talk about this in what I couldn't tell my therapist. That is a very different question than, and how did that make you feel? And how did that make you feel?
Yes.
Because what feelings are coming up as you look at me is a very pointed clinical question, and there's a reason behind it, right? And this question first says, you're allowed to have feelings towards me. You do have feelings towards me. We can have multiple feelings towards somebody at the same time.
Sure.
You know, and those feelings are what make you uncomfortable and need to look away. So there's so many different communications.
Right.
And so it depends on the person. The therapy looks so different for each and every person. It really does. I've never had two therapies that even remotely look the same.
Right. Right.
But that's the beauty of this kind of therapeutic work. It's like we're trained to tailor it.
Yes, it's so true.
Defenses, yeah. Anxiety types, problems, et cetera.
Yeah.
So yeah, we really help the person see, oh, I look away.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So when I look at somebody else, my body gets tense, or maybe I get sick in my stomach.
Right.
Oh, that's a really high type of anxiety. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I don't let myself have anger towards somebody I care about.
Right.
I have no ability to have two feelings that are maybe kind of opposing each other. Like, I care about you and I want to throw you out the window.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So we really help people to get to the heart of what they were trained to avoid.
That's true.
So that they no longer have to avoid it. And if we find our feelings non-threatening, we're not going to get anxious, and then we don't need to use defenses.
So true. Oh my goodness. And if people really realize and go deeper, and so what do I do with that? You know, they ask me sometimes, what do I do with that now that I know? What do I do? Okay, I'm doing this. I'm having these nervous tics when I say whatever or stop talking about. What is the work is exploring that and what it is within that situation or that you're talking about.
Like, the work is seeing if you can help the person experience the feelings.
Yes.
In a safe body.
Yes.
And then when we experience long avoided emotions, this actually unlocks deeper systems within the unconscious. So all of a sudden, I might actually remember this.
Yes.
Experience this, you know, if I'm this little girl, for example,
yes.
Experience where I said, you know, I couldn't kick this goal. And now all of a sudden I remember how my dad treated me after that.
Yes. Yes.
And then maybe my body all of a sudden can finally have that anger.
Yes.
And so we actually help people feel that anger and feel it as deeply as possible. And this is where the kind of therapy can get pretty intense, because anger comes with aggressive impulses.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Right? Not actions, right? We're not helping people actually go out there into the world,
right.
You know.
Right.
But we're helping people to no longer be afraid of their aggressive urges.
Yes.
To see why that anger might have been so painful, is because maybe that anger wanted to do something very aggressive to somebody they also deeply loved.
That's heavy too.
And can we help them hold that all?
Yes.
Yeah, you did want to strangle her, and yet she was the woman you loved most in this entire world.
Right.
What's that like to have that together in a safe body, knowing that she doesn't have to get hurt and you don't have to hurt you to protect her?
Right.
Beautiful. So the whole work is experiencing those things. Now, not everyone needs to get to that level of experiencing.
Sure, sure.
But that's, you know, it can get even deeper, but that's, you know, those are some of the wells that we help people go into and get out of. Mm-hmm.
No, it's beautifully said, Michelle, and I really appreciate that. By the way, if you're interested in really learning more about these deeper processes and how to get in touch with some of your unresolved issues and whatever it may be, also physiological issues, which Michelle really discovered how to manage and pretty much heal her severe migraines that she had for years. This is the book to check out. What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist, Michelle May. It's a wonderful learning experience, and she goes through some of the tools she uses and the understanding and what it's a lot about, you know, and how we can survive through a lot of trauma. And a lot of people don't really need severe trauma to hang on to things, right, Michelle, or beliefs that are not healthy for them, right?
That's exactly right. We can have loving, fantastic families and good relationships and still kind of find ourselves in some of these positions with anxiety, depression, and pains that we can't explain that doctors can't help us with.
Right. It's so true. Something else that, you know, you kind of share or talk about in the book as well is, especially now, you know, after the election has happened, and there's a lot of unhappy people in the world, and some psychologists, psychotherapists, they were saying, look, just don't, if you're going to argue during Thanksgiving dinner, just don't show up. Just don't even be present with your relatives, because it's just, don't do it. Don't, you know, or pull them away from you, get space from these people in your life who you don't agree with, or you might argue with, or just draw boundaries for as long as you want, which could be years. What do you think about that, Michelle? What do you tell people?
Yeah, I think it really depends on who's asking, because if it's somebody that has a problem with argumentativeness, or somebody that likes to be superior, or somebody that has a hard time holding mixed feelings together, right? I'll tailor what I tell to each person.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Exactly.
However, one thing that we seem to really be struggling with is, are you familiar with the defense of splitting?
Yes. Yes.
So for those that are not familiar, splitting is when we see the world in black and white, or, you know, we idealize somebody, and then if they do one thing wrong, we devalue them. We have a hard time holding the complexities of life.
Yes.
And I can't think of much that brings that to light more than something like politics and the election.
Sure it does.
Yeah, and so the question I sometimes ask people is, and again, it really depends on the person. Some people I would not say this. Yeah. Do you want to put down boundaries, or do you want to get curious?
Right.
Do you want to see if you can go into a conversation with somebody and hold on to the fact that this is the exact same mother, for example,
yes,
that helped you through cancer?
Right.
And she didn't vote for who you voted for.
Yeah.
Right. Right? What happens when you try to hold all of that together? Right. Sure. Right? What sure. happens if you assume these people are actually not quote unquote crazy, and you try to learn why they're thinking what
they're
thinking? Right. And what happens if you try to not change their mind?
Right.
You can't do it anyway.
No, you cannot. No, you cannot.
I've never seen someone, right? So those are some of the things we want to start asking ourselves is, can we start to approach each other differently in a way that allows people to feel safe? Because so much of what polarizes people is getting argued with and then saying, no, I'm holding on to this more because you're challenging me.
Right.
This is actually more like human behavior. I'm not going to open up my mind.
It's true.
Knowing that you're trying to change my mind, I'm going to show you that you can't.
That's right.
Right? That's more normal. That's more typical.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
So it doesn't help. We think we're being crusaders if we try to change minds. But, you know, if that were the case, we'd have a lot of changed minds, and we probably would have none.
Gosh, is that so true? Beautifully said, Michelle. Yeah, I was encouraging folks just to, you know, not just – Don't split the family over this issue. I mean, allow their truth. That's their truth. Whatever. Understand perhaps. And why do you feel so strongly? And it's not, why my thing is why are you allowing this to get you so mad and affecting you? Perhaps, of course you don't believe the way they believe. Of course you have different causes that you believe in, or whatever that is, or you don't like certain personality characteristics about a candidate, or whatever it is. Just try to think about family and talk about other things.
Yeah. You know? That, I mean, avoidance is a really powerful and helpful defense mechanism. A lot of
it is.
Right.
All our lives. So.
Yeah, right. You know, so avoidance might be the best thing. And sometimes every now and then cutting somebody off is really the best thing for someone to do. Every now and then that is the choice somebody painfully has to make. Every now and then we have to say, hey, I don't mind that this person thinks differently, but the way they treat me is continuously exactly. unacceptable. And so I am going to put up these boundaries.
Exactly.
So yeah, there's a lot of potential things that can be helpful to somebody. And that's why it's just so important that, you know, there are some people I would never say, you should approach so-and-so with understanding. I mean, you know, I never, so it totally depends.
It's true. You're so right. You're so right, Michelle. And it is really true. And I am an advocate as well of that, because I mean, sometimes it's just when someone is coming at you or someone and they're screaming and yelling and they're getting all worked up and you're taking on that energy, you know, I'm not going to get triggered. I'm not going to get triggered. And that's not healthy either. So there are times we need breaks and or permanent breaks from some people who, you know, really are not willing to just talk about the weather or something else besides, you know, demeaning and being cruel and verbally abusing. I agree, Michelle. There's so much to talk about, but we're going to have to get ready to wrap up here. But
it flies by.
I love your work. It's lovely. It really is. And by the way, check out Michelle May, because you've done so much to help people. You've written this book, What I Couldn't Tell My Therapist, and it'll really give you a better understanding of some of your own issues that you're dealing with, clear up some misconceptions about anxiety and depression, and also perhaps really think about some of the physiological issues you're having, because the mind and body, right, are so connected. And what is the best way? Of course, everyone could get her book on Amazon and everywhere else, but what's the best way that folks can find out more about you, Michelle?
There are two ways. One is my website, which is Michelle M. May LPC. So that's Michelle with two L's, M, my middle initial, and May, M-A-Y, like the month, LPC, as in licensed professional counselor. So that's MichelleMMayLPC.com. And then I actually started an Instagram account that's all about helping people learn from clinical scenarios. What are the anxiety? Yes. What are the defenses? And then we get to learn all of this stuff in a pretty interactive way. And to find me on Instagram, it's actually the exact same thing. It's Michelle M. May, LPC. So that's how you can find me there. And those are the two best ways.
And those are great too. I love your, all of your posts. I love your wonderful work. And it is checking out intensive short-term dynamic psychotherapy, which she is an expert at. So thank you so much, Michelle, for making
Thank you so much. This was so my pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, you're great. Have a lovely week and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yes, hopefully. I'd love to be back.
Oh, thank you.
Bye.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me here on the couch. And this is Dr. Michelle Cohen. Have a great day and take care of yourselves first. And then you'll be great for everybody else. That's the way it works. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.